Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb. I'm just going to read the first part of the summary. In this chapter, to dissipate the doubts of his class friends, sons of the demons, Prahlad Maharaj states how... Oh. In this chapter, to dissipate the doubts of his close friends, class friends, the sons of the demons... Prahlad Maharaj states how within the womb of his mother he had heard from the mouth of Narada Muni, who had instructed him in Bhagavad Dharma. Text 1. Sri Narada Vacha.
Sri Narada Vacha.
Evam Daitya.
Sutai Prishto.
Evam Daitya Sutai Prishto.
Mahabhagavato Sura.
Mahabhagavato Sura.
Vacha Tan. Samaya Vana
Vachana Samaya Vana
Smaran Vat Anubhasitam
Smaran Anubhasitam
Shri Narada Vacha.
Shri Narada Vacha.
The great Saint Narada Muni said,
the great Saint Narada Muni said,
Eva,
Eva,
thus,
Daitya
Surai
Sutai
Daitya Surai
Daitya Sutai.
Daitya Sutai.
By the sons of the demons.
By the sons of the demons.
Prishtaha.
Prishtaha.
Being questioned.
Being questioned.
Mahabhagavata.
Mahabhagavata.
The exalted devotee of the Lord.
The exalted devotee
of the Lord.
Sura.
Born in the family of demons.
Born in the family of demons.
Uvacha.
Uvacha.
Spoke.
Spoke.
Tan.
Unto them.
The sons of the demons.
Smayamana,
smiling,
smaran,
remembering,
mat
anubhavitam,
anubhashitam, mat
anubhashitam. What was spoken by me?
What was spoken by me?
Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Narada Muni said, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he was the greatest of all devotees. Having thus been questioned by his class friends, the sons of the asuras, he remembered the words spoken to him by me and replied to his friends as follows. Prabhupada. When he was in the womb of his mother, Prahlad Maharaj listened to the words of Narada Muni. One cannot imagine how the baby in embryo could hear Narada. But this is spiritual life. Progress in spiritual life cannot be obstructed by any material condition. This is called ahaitiki apritiyata. Perception of spiritual knowledge is never checked by any material condition. As Prahlad Maharaj from his very childhood had spoke spiritual knowledge to his class friends, and certainly he was effective, although all of them were children. Shri Narada Vacha Evam Daitya Sutai Prishto Mahabhagavato Sura Uvacha Tan Smayamana Smaran Mad Anubhashitam. Narada Muni said, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in the family of asuras, he was the greatest of all devotees. Having thus been questioned by his class friends, the sons of the asuras, remember the words spoken by him to him by me and replied to his friends as follows. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatundeve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Sitarane. The beginning of the seventh canto, we have the question that why is the Supreme Lord actually equal to everyone? Because it appeared that Hiranyakashipu was and his brother were killed by Lord Varaha and by Lord Nrisimhadev because Krishna was showing favoritism towards the demons. I mean, to the demigods. And the demigods were complaining that the Supreme Lord is just like a child. If you offer a child some candy, and he'll do whatever you want. So because the demigods offered Vishnu some candy, therefore he wound up killing them, killing the demons. But the chapter is called The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone. Now here, in this particular verse, we find that Prahlad Maharaj was simply in the womb of his mother, and he was a demon. He was born of a demon family. So why is it that he became a great devotee just by listening in the womb of his mother? I mean, probably our parents were better than her in Kashyapu. Why don't we become devotees? Well, why do the children of our devotees, for instance, sometimes some devotee lady is pregnant and she reads the Bhagavatam to her child in the womb, and he comes out, and maybe he takes up devotional service for some time, but then for some time he may fall into maya, into bad activities. Now, in fact, sometimes our Gurukul students, they become overly proud of being born in devotee families, and they believe that they're invincible. They can do whatever they want because they're born as devotees. So why was Prahlad given this special opportunity? And why aren't we not given this special opportunity? Maybe we should complain that Vishnu is not equal to us. Why did he show such favoritism to Prahlad? So this is an opportunity to examine, is the Supreme Lord actually equal to everyone? Or is the Supreme Lord favorable to some and unfavorable to others? He looks at our face and says, I don't like your face, so I'm sorry. You're going to have to take many births before you can become a devotee. It just so happens Hiranyakashipu gives us the philosophy in the Bhakti Hari Sudhodaya. He tells Prahlad Maharaj that association is just like, and this is in the Nectar of Devotion, association is just like a crystal. That according to whatever the crystal is, whatever light is shown into the crystal reflects. So similarly, everything depends upon association. Or as Prabhupada writes, that is, if a man is powerful, potent, and the woman is fertile or not diseased, then there'll be pregnancy if they're united. Then there'll be conception. So similarly, everything depends upon two things. Who we're hearing from, and what is our receptivity to that hearing. Now Narada Muni, he spoke, of course we know the history, is that Narada Muni, when the demigods, well, let's back up one millennium or something, whatever it was. When Hiranyakashipu went to the forest to perform austerity in order to conquer the universe, the demigods took advantage of it and invaded his kingdom and captured his wife. And Indra was taking his wife away because she was pregnant, and Indra wanted to kill the child within the womb, thinking that we have enough demons around. We don't need the son of this demon, who might be even a bigger demon than his father. But Narada Muni appeared, as usual, and he told Indra that actually there's a great devotee in the womb of this child, of this woman. That even if he wanted to kill this child, he would be able to because he's protected by Vishnu. So even before Narada Muni had taken Kadayu to the ashram and spoke to her, now the reason why he spoke to her was because he was a great devotee in her womb. And he wanted to give Prahlad the opportunity to hear about Krishna even before he was born. He didn't take any old woman to his ashram and decide to preach to her. She was a very special lady who had a very special child in her womb. So Prahlad Maharaj, exactly what he did in his past lifetime, we don't know. All we have is little fragments of information, something about his at least one of the aspect, one of the advents of Prahlad Maharaj, because there may be more than one incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj had a girlfriend. In the Vedic culture, if you have a girlfriend, she's considered, and you're not married to her, she's considered to be a prostitute. They're not very sentimental or romantic. In any case, he had a girlfriend, he was meeting her in the Shingadev temple, and they got into a quarrel. And because they got into a quarrel, Prahlad Maharaj lost his appetite or something, and he fasted the whole night. And it just so happens it was Nrisimha Chaturdasi. So he got credit for fasting on Nrisimha Chaturdasi. That's all we know. And then somehow or another, he took birth as Prahlad. But I'm sure there's more to the story. There's always more to the story. We just don't. And sometimes devotees search for the scriptures, trying to find out what's more to the story. Just like we have the example of Putana. Now, Putana was a witch, a bruja. And, well, that's better. Katora. Katora means, Katora means one who can fly in the sky in a broom. If you can learn that art, save us a lot of money. Avoid a lot of security problems also. Anyhow, she knew there is a class of ladies in India, at least used to be, they knew the art of uprooting a branch and flying on it. So we may take that as mythology or whatever, but it's possible, I guess. One time Prabhupada came to Dallas when I was there. I had a chance to spend some time with him in Dallas. And when he was coming to the airport, then I got the opportunity to hold the umbrella over Prabhupada and walk him down the airport. Prabhupada was just floating. Everyone was running to try and catch up with him. Although he appeared to be an older, elderly gentleman, still no one could walk as fast, even half as fast as he was walking. And they asked him, the reporters were there because they had an interview with him, and they asked him how he came. And he said, there's three ways you can come. One of them is by airplane. And the other one is by mystic power. And the third way is if you strap a lot of pigeons together and you put them, I guess, on some kind of chariot or something, then they can fly you around. I mean, you need a lot of pigeons, or they must be very special pigeons. And they asked him, so, Prabhupada, how did you come? He said, I came by airplane just to be one with you. So these are the Katori witches, they could fly around. And Putana, she came to Vrindavan with the idea of trying to kill Krishna. Now, there was a lot of demons, but most of them luckily don't come around trying to kill Krishna. First of all, they don't know about Krishna. They don't believe in Krishna, so it's probably unlikely someone's going to try and kill someone they don't believe in. But in any case, Putana really believed in Krishna, and she wanted to kill him. Not a very favorable attitude. And she came to Vrindavan and disguised herself as a very beautiful young lady and tried to give Krishna her breast milk filled with poison. And of course Krishna sucked out her breast milk and sucked out the poison and killed her. Now the question is, why did she become elevated to this transcendental platform, the transcendental world, and was given the position as one of the mothers of Krishna there? Does that mean if we really want to make real rapid progress, we should try to find Krishna and try to kill him? All this sadhana bhakti and all this austerity and everything, easier just to try and kill him. Then because he's so merciful, he'll take you back to the spiritual world. But then there's a history. There's always a history. So unless sometimes it's good to know the history, otherwise we'll misunderstand what's going on. Then in previous lifetimes, because Bhagavatam is full of stories, and sometimes we're only a lot of these personalities, because Krishna comes once in a day of Brahma, and there's a lot of days of Brahma. And we're getting different stories in the Puranas and other literatures explaining what happens, because the explanation may be according to different Mahayugas, different days of Brahma. But one explanation explains that actually when Bali Maharaj was performing the sacrifice, that at that time Vamanadev, when is the appearance day of Vamanadev coming?
Saturday.
Next Saturday. So Radharani's appearance day is before. So, and that's Ekadasi too, probably. Dwadasi. It's the day after Ekadasi. So we fast for half a day on Ekadasi.
I think it's
Mahadvadasi. Oh, so it's the Ekadasi. Yeah, so you fast half a day on the Ekadasi, on the Dwadasi. So she came one day of Brahma. Bali Maharaj had a daughter, and when Vamanadeva walked into the arena, she saw him and she fell in love with him, and she wanted to become his mother. And another incident, another time, Bali Maharaj had a sister, and when the sister saw her, Vamanadeva, she fell in love with him and also wanted to become his mother. But then when Vamanadeva took away everything from Bali and pushed him down into Sutala, into the kingdom of the lower planetary systems, she became very angry at Vamanadeva and wanted to kill him. So she had two feelings. One of them, she had the intense feelings of wanting to be Krishna's mother, and she had another intense feeling of wanting to kill him. So Krishna has to satisfy all these feelings, if they're intense enough for her. You know, we have a little feeling, I want to be Krishna's mother. Krishna doesn't take it seriously because we don't take it seriously. And we think, Krishna, why did you do this? Someone stole my glove to him and I think I want to kill you. Krishna doesn't take it seriously either. We don't take it very seriously. But she was serious. She really wanted to become his mother and she really wanted to kill him. So therefore Krishna gave her the opportunity to take birth as Putana. And he gave her the opportunity for a very short period of time to act as his mother, to try to breastfeed him, but she also gave him the opportunity to try to kill him simultaneously. But when Krishna killed her, then he sucked out her poison, and when he sucked out her poison and life air, he also purified her of a desire to try to kill him. She made an attempt, it didn't work, so she got purified from it. But that original desire to be Krishna's mother was the only thing left, that intense desire. So she only had left the intense desire to become Krishna's mother. So then Krishna put her in the spiritual world to act as his mother. So it's not Krishna's showing favoritism, he's simply reciprocating appropriately according to people's desires. Similarly, Prahlad, although it may seem that he got extraordinary mercy beyond what we could possibly imagine or what we might even think is fair, because many times if we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, people seem to get extraordinary mercy and we're wondering, you know, I'm trying so hard and I don't get any mercy, and these people don't try at all and they get all the mercy. What's going on? Like there was one Mohammedan king, he was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came across where he was, the Mohammedans were stationed, and the Mohammedan governor there was a drunkard. And the secretary there, the assistant of King Prataparudra, the government on that side where the Hindus were, was afraid. He didn't know how to get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu across. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I believe, was trying to go to, on his way, I guess, Vrindavan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, is all-powerful, so he arranged it. So one, the Mohammedan had heard that there's someone across and there's something going on, so he sent a spy. And the spy went across and saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu surrounded by his followers and became ecstatic. And he came back to report to the governor and said, I just saw who the person he wanted me to spy on. And he's surrounded by all these devotees and they're all ecstatic. And I became ecstatic too, and he started to chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So the king was, what? You're just a messenger, you're just a spy, a Mohammedan spy, and now you're chanting Hare Krishna like a devout Hindu. There must be something going on there. So he decided to find out. So he made a deal with the leader over there who was taking care of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he would come, and he wanted to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he would come, he wouldn't have any weapons or anything, he'd just bring some of his followers. And so the devotee agreed, yes, you can come and meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so the Mohammedan governor crossed the river, saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and fell on the ground in ecstasy. And then he was brought to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's completely ecstatic. And he said, you know, why was I born a Muslim? I could have been born a Hindu. Maybe I should die immediately, then I get the opportunity to take birth as a Hindu and have your association. In any case, the story goes on. So how is this extraordinary mercy? Well, it's not by accident. Obviously, he was must have done something wrong because he was a Mohammedan king, a drunkard. But he must have done something right because he got the opportunity to get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association. So how does that relate to us? Well, the basic principle is Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sarukabhanoi Shravanadi Shudachite Karya Udoy. That love for Krishna is naturally in everyone's heart. And just by the process of hearing and chanting, it can be awakened and our original love of God can be manifested. Now it depends on two things. One is how powerful is the person, how realized is the person, how spiritually full of Krishna Shakti is that person, is that devotee who's giving us the information. And number two, how receptive are we to the information? Krishna doesn't change. If someone says Hare Krishna, then Krishna is there, whether they know it or not. Of course they say Snik Snik Ram Ram Day Day Day. Maybe a cat will come. Hey kitty kitty, hey kitty kitty. But if we're actually trying to chant Hare Krishna, then Krishna will actually be present. But not everyone's going to be equally receptive to that sound vibration. The person who's chanting it may not be chanting in full ecstatic love and awareness. And the person who's listening may not be conscious either. We have Narada Muni. Here he's speaking to Prahlad. Prahlad became realized in the womb. But we have Narada Muni also speaking to Magrari the hunter. Powerful Narada Muni is full of transcendental potencies. When Magrari the hunter met Narada Muni, he wanted to chastise him because Narada Muni spoiled his hunting. Magrari the hunter was half killing animals and watching them suffer and getting great enjoyment. Narada Muni was compassionate. He didn't like seeing animals, anyone suffering like that. So he interrupted Magrari's hunting, and Magrari became very disturbed because all the animals had fled. When Narada Muni entered into the clearing where all the animals were there, and they all fled from when they saw Narada Muni. So Magrari the hunter wanted to curse Narada Muni, but in the presence of Narada Muni he couldn't, because Narada Muni is so transcendently spiritually powerful, and he creates such a spiritual atmosphere that Magrari the hunter couldn't curse him. He couldn't say anything. But he questioned Narada Muni. And Narada Muni gave him good information, revealed to him that you're going to go to, not only go to hell, but you're going to be tortured by these animals that you're half killing. And Magrari, he didn't become like Prahlad Maharaj in Mahabhagavat immediately. But he took up the process and started to chant Hare Krishna sincerely. Because obviously his past life was not the same as someone like Prahlad Maharaj. So we can't say, well, Narada Muni, he liked Prahlad in the womb, but Magrari the hunter, he liked him a little bit, but, you know, he didn't give him enough deer skin or something, so he only half benedicted him. No, there's a whole history, just like there's a whole history with all of us. We just didn't wind up in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, the stalk was trying to take us to our mother and father, and she saw something, you know, she was hungry, so she dropped us off at the Hare Krishna temple. It's not like that. It's not by accident that we hear. We hear it because of, you know, what we've done in the past, devotional service, as Rupa Goswami says, the continuum over many lifetimes. And so we're given the opportunity to associate with certain devotees. Obviously, Narad Muni doesn't come here. It's not one of the places on his tour. He stops in here for the Sunday feast. But according to what we deserve, we have our speakers and our association, and we have a certain amount of receptivity. And if we take advantage of that, then we might make some spiritual advancement. So the main thing is to learn how to hear. Those who can take the greatest opportunity, the greatest advantage of any circumstance, are those who know how to hear. How to hear in such a way as to understand what to do to make spiritual advancement. If the atmosphere is not there, we don't perceive it immediately, spontaneously, by some good fortune, then we have to learn how to actually access the spiritual energy through learning the process of hearing. Now, it appears that Narada Muni, as it says in the Nectar of Devotion, as for the ecstatic love of Krishna, there is a statement in the 7th canto, 4th chapter, verse 36 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Previously we've heard this before, but we're going to refresh our memories. My dear King, it is very difficult to describe the character of Prahlad. He developed a natural attraction for Krishna, and whatever I can explain about his character will simply be an arrangement of words. His actual character is impossible to describe. This means that Narada himself admitted that the natural development of Prahlad's ecstatic love was by the grace of Lord Krishna. So Narada didn't think, well, I'm such a powerful devotee, and that, you know, here was Prahlad in the womb of his mother, and I spoke to him, and of course he came out, so there's another bhakta that I get credit for making another devotee. Give Narada Muni 5 Sika points. No, he understood that Prahlad was already a great devotee, and he was an instrument. Krishna had sent him there so that he could actually do Krishna's will and bring him to the highest platform of Krishna consciousness. The natural attraction of Krishna on the part of Prahlad was developed simply by the mercy of Narada. So now we have another viewpoint. When Prahlad Maharaj was in the womb of his mother, she was being sympathetically instructed by Narada about the science of devotional service. At the same time, Narada was wishing that the child within the womb could also take advantage of the instructions. Because Narada was an authorized devotee and great associate of the personality of Godhead, was desiring auspiciousness for Prahlad Maharaj, he developed all the characteristics of a high-grade devotee. This is natural attraction. It's caused by the special grace of the personality of Godhead or by the special grace of a great devotee like Narada. So both things have to be there. Without some special desire on the part of Narada, he wouldn't have been able to bring Prahlad to the highest devotional level. And without Prahlad being qualified to get that mercy, he wouldn't have come to the highest devotional platform of Krishna consciousness either. So again, if the man is potent and the woman is fertile, then they're at conception, then there'll be pregnancy. So both things have to be there. So for ourselves, we may have a certain amount of realization in Krishna consciousness, and the people we're associating with, certainly they have a certain amount of realization in Krishna consciousness also. Because being born in a human society, you have to have some element of God consciousness. If you're not, it may be not very large nowadays, but there's some influence of religious principles within the society. Like thou shalt not kill, although they've changed it to thou shalt not kill human beings, although they're also killing human beings as things get degraded. But still there's that principle there. You can kill as many animals as you want, because you can't kill my dog or my cat. But unless you're living in China, but or Korea, actually, they started to confiscate the dogs of the only very aristocratic people in China and in Korea have dogs because they can't afford to feed them. But there's some starvation, so they're in North Korea, so they're claiming that they're confiscating dogs from all these wealthy people so they can eat them, because people are hungry. And they don't mind eating dogs. As a matter of fact, it's a luxury to eat a dog. In any case, luckily we don't eat dogs. Different tastes for different people. And here we're living in a society where people are somewhat religious. At least they don't, you know. There are certain principles that they follow. There's certain rules and regulations. So there's a certain amount of receptivity. Matter of fact, when we find that people are vegetarians, often when we're preaching, we find that they're even more receptive. And sometimes we go to yoga places because you find there's mostly many vegetarians and people are interested in the chanting, whatever. So they're more receptive. And if we're prepared and we chant our rounds and we're in proper consciousness and we know how to approach people, we consider it, then it's much more likely we're going to have some effect. So this is just some letter that Prabhupada wrote to me, which I won't read the whole letter because it's quite a long letter. But in fact, wherever we go, if we simply let the people hear our chanting and if we repeat what we've heard from the bona fide spiritual master, then surely many, many sincere souls will become attracted to our movement. This is because Krishna consciousness is lying dormant in every living entity. Remember that verse? Mm-hmm. What's the verse? Krishna Prema, Sadhu Kavanoa. Just like fire dormant within a match. If we simply strike the match, then the fire within will come in blazing light. Our method of striking the match is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This vibration is sufficient to awaken the sleeping soul to the fact that Krishna is there. If we try to remember him always and spread his message of Bhagavad Gita, then our life becomes perfect. We are perfectly executing our position as part and parcel of the Lord. So if you let all the residents of Buffalo hear the sound of Hare Krishna and read our literatures, then there will be the greatest all-around benefit. This past week in San Francisco, there's a gigantic Rath Yatra ceremony just on the order of the one held at Jagannath Puri, and at least 10,000 people were chanting and dancing along with us in full transcendental ecstasy. The boys and girls of America are generally good souls. That is why they have taken birth in such a nice country. And now they should make perfect all their opulences by engaging everything in Krishna consciousness. This will be the finishing touch for all the nice qualities found in the American people. Talk about being positive. In New York, I understand that they have sold 3,000 Bhakti Godheads in just 2 weeks, and I understand in Buffalo, you are also selling Bhakti Godhead very nicely. So please continue in this way, and your success of life is assured. As Krishna sees that you are working very seriously to bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then he'll become very pleased and bestow all blessings upon you. Krishna is never ungrateful for efforts to serve him, rest assured. So we may not be powerful like Narada Muni, and we may not be preaching to so many Prahlad Maharajas, or even Raghuri Huntas. Of course, maybe we are. But certainly we're not as powerful as Narada Muni. Still, whatever we do, Krishna appreciates if we become an instrument for his preaching mission. Although people are not so receptive, still, if we chant Hare Krishna, then something will enter into their ears, if they're not cupping them, as sometimes we see. People close their ears because they don't want to hear anything. But if they're a little receptive, then it'll enter into the ear and gradually wake them up, and wake us up also. And then as he sees that we're actually serious, as we wake up a little bit, and Krishna sees us, then he'll empower us more and more to become more and more productive, to not only be efficient, but effective in his preaching work. Then as Prabhupada said, our lives will become successful in Krishna consciousness. So we should remember that we just do the service we're supposed to do, and we may not be so as empowered as we would like to be. But still, if we simply do it sincerely, then Krishna will gradually empower us, and one day we'll be able to do something very effective in spreading Krishna consciousness. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. So, when we hear live, is it the same as if we hear from a recording?
Depends what you think. If you think, because when it's live, you probably pay more attention. Because the person might be looking at you and you're afraid of being embarrassed. But when you hear your recording, you may space out because you may not believe he's there, or you may have so many conceptions. But it could be, if you hear with attention and with reverence, then one will realize that there's no difference between hearing directly and hearing by Vani and Vapa, by Vani. But that requires some faith, and faith requires experience. But at least theoretically, we should understand that there's no difference, that the person, the sound vibration and the recording is just as powerful as the sound vibration being personally spoken. Although the circumstances may change our receptivity to it. But if we hear it with proper consciousness and try to understand, then Krishna will reveal to us. And then we could get the same experience. Is that right? Therefore, if we really want to take the best advantage, then we can hear Prabhupada singing or speaking, and if we have the right attitude. Because sometimes people don't, they rather hear something more appropriate to their mood, and it may not be what they consider an old Bengali gentleman trying to chant Hare Krishna, and not exactly in prime time voice, with a prime time voice. And therefore, they rather hear something more contemporary. So that's all right. They're hearing Hare Krishna, and if it's coming into super succession for Prabhupada, they'll actually be benefited, and they may be more receptive. So they may get more benefit from hearing than those devotees who are singing what they consider very sweetly. But if they understand things properly, and they listen to Prabhupada, and try to listen attentively and be receptive, they may discover that Prabhupada is actually singing for the spiritual world, which you can't duplicate just by singing sweetly. Anything else?
Probably this question was related to the statement of Guru Govinda Maharaj that for transferring the Shabda Brahman, you need a living person, not recording. That's probably connected to this. Is this so? Is this connected to that? You mentioned yesterday. Yes.
I'm sure it's connected. Well, the person who said that, is he still alive? The devotee who said that, is he still alive?
No, this is the class of Gaur Govinda Maharaj.
But is he still here?
Who, Gaur Govinda Maharaj?
Yeah. So what's the value of repeating it? Because it has no effect anymore. You don't understand the logic.
It's a question of.
Yeah, but you don't understand the logic. If it's, the person has to be physically present to have any potency to what they're saying, then if he's not here anymore physically, so what's the value of repeating what he said? It has no potency. You understand?
I was thinking about the principle of.
Well, that's what I mean. The principle is.
How Shabda is transferred to the level of the conditioned soul. That's probably the question.
What Gaur Govinda Maharaj supposedly said, right? And he said Shabda doesn't have potency if the person's not present. He's not physically present. Is that right?
Was this the question?
Yeah.
Well, what's your question?
No, he said it's like in his book. He said that we must have a living guru if you want to.
That's what I just said, but is he alive now?
I mean, he's not here.
As a rhythmic concept,
You need a living guru.
Why?
Then why the religion is wrong?
It's not 100% wrong. It's only half wrong. Because even in our scriptures it says you can chant Hare Krishna and get the full effect. You don't have to take initiation. The only problem is that without initiation, then we don't give up our false ego so easily. Without actually practically doing service to someone. And therefore, you know, a person who's in the line as a subsection and following and serving their message, they tell you, you know, you find it, you're here, now do this, and then you do it in a service attitude, then you're acting as your false ego is being gradually dissipated because you're acting as a servant to Krishna, servant, and Krishna reciprocates with you. Now, if you don't have that service attitude towards a living person, towards a person, someone who's alive, it's just all theoretical. And you don't really hear from them what they want you to do. Then the result is that you can just do whatever you imagine to do. As if it was, but that doesn't have the same effect as actually hearing from someone as a servant of their, of being a servant of them or a servant of their servants and serving them. So the Rudraks aren't wrong. You can hear, Prabhupada's books are just as powerful. Prabhupada's instruction is just as powerful as when he was physically present before us, because he's transcendental. The instructions are transcendental. The question is, what is our service attitude? How do we know what Prabhupada wants us to do? How do we know that Prabhupada is going to accept us as a spiritual master, as our Diksha Guru? How do we know that we're surrendering to him? Where did Prabhupada say that? Otherwise, why not take initiation from Brahma? Why not from Krishna directly? You can ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, here's the beads, you know, can you, you know, please chant on them and then give them back to me. why just Prabhupada? Why not go to the source, Krishna? But what does Krishna say? One who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee. But one who claims to be the devotee of my devotee, he's actually my devotee. So it's a different thing. I mean, they got that wrong in that sense. They're not wrong in the fact that you can hear and make spiritual advancement. Because why are we saying we should hear from Prabhupada? But we should hear from, we learn how to hear by developing a service attitude, and we learn the service attitude by surrendering to someone who actually can test us. As Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, as we read yesterday, when one can pass the test of the spiritual master, then he blesses one with genuine spiritual understanding. So there's that for most of us, if not 99%, if we're not Shukadeva Goswami or something like that, then we have to practice becoming a servant of the servant.
So from this perspective, we need the guru.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so they're not 100% wrong, they're just 50% wrong. For some. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Krindaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.